This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Pack. Hope you had a nice weekend, and certainly was an eventful weekend across the ACC footprint. A lot of student athletes out front of the cause, and I know you went to Clemson. That must have been quite a scene down there. The photos and some of the video I've seen is really compelling stuff.
We're going to talk about this. There was a unity march at Clemson. It was one at Florida State and Tallahassee as well. I drove down to Clemson on Saturday morning and spent the day there. And, Wes, it was sensational. I mean, it was a 10 on a 10 scale. To see the outpouring of support from other students, the community, the football team put together this, student athletes put together this event. It was very emotional. Again, they announced 3,000 people that were there. It looked more like five, but nevertheless, that's not really the point. The message was sensational. Again, the players did such a great job. Darian Rencher in particular, I want to point out, because we had both Darian and Trevor Lawrence on the show on Friday. And again, the players did such a sensational job putting this together. This is actually, I think, video I took on my phone. This was about 10, 15 minutes before the event was getting ready to get started. Just a beautiful day, and people showed up, had the black T-shirts on. A lot of folks wearing masks, which was good to see, social distancing taking place. But the message was so good. And Darian Rencher in particular, I want to point out something. And I know we just had him on the show Friday, and I don't know. I still haven't met him. But if you are a company and you're ready to hire somebody, I'm hiring that guy. He was so eloquent with his words, passion. I think, again, the players spoke from the heart. It resonated with everybody that was there. And like I said, it was very emotional. It was just incredible to see, again, young people take ownership. And the student-athletes of Clemson did it. The student-athletes of Florida State did it. And we'll talk to Ira Schoeffel coming up here in about 15 minutes and Grace Rainer in the next hour. But I mean, the march was peaceful. People were totally dialed into it. Dabo spoke. The players spoke. And like I said, it was a very and I've been on that campus thousands of times, right, after not only spending time there as a graduate, but also working there for 3 years afterwards. It was one of those days that you said, you know what, they've won a ton of games here. I've got a daughter that's graduated. I got another one's going to graduate in May. It was one of the best days. It was. It was a great day. Still emotional about it.
That's awesome. I think it was, I think it's impactful to, I think it's impactful not only to Clemson. I think it was impactful certainly in Florida State. But you mentioned some of the comments that were made during the speeches. And let's start with Dabo Swinney, and you'll hear from Trevor Lawrence and Darian Rencher too.
Our team loves each other. Our team is united, unified, and ready to continue to be a light in the darkness and to continue to lead. I'm incredibly proud of this group. So proud of what I've been able to see them do. And I'm so thankful that they chose me as their head coach, and I'm thankful that they chose to come to Clemson. I know they need me, and I stand with them and will do all I can to help them unify people and create the positive change that they seek.
The past few weeks, I've been uncomfortable. That word uncomfortable will be an important one in all of our steps and our journey to bring equality. I've learned that every truly good thing in life comes from being brave and stepping into the uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to set aside everything I know about America and listen to someone else's perspective. However, it's necessary. So let's continue to listen, learn, and love even when it is uncomfortable. Especially when it's uncomfortable. Because this is when change happens. And the world for generations to come will be different. It'll be better.
The struggle for freedom means more than just sympathy, but solidarity. Sympathy feels bad about a situation. Solidarity joins us. They stand with people who are struggling, and they fight for them, which you guys have done today.
Darian Rentscher, just sensational with his speech. I will point out one other thing, too, Wes. When we finished up our show on Friday, there was a debate taking place on that campus with the Calhoun Honors College in Tillman Hall. And what Calhoun and Tillman in past history meant and represented. And when we went off the air on Friday, the Board of Trustees, President Clements, and announced that they were going to change the names from the Calhoun Honors College to Clemson University Honors College, and Tillman Hall is now going to be called Old Main. And I thought Dabo Swinney, we didn't play this, but I made a note of this when I was there Saturday. He made a comment which I thought was one of the most powerful messages of the day, up and above the Unity March and everything else that was going on. Dabo said, he brought up Deshaun Watson and Nuke Hopkins, who are two great players who are now in the NFL. And those two gentlemen were very adamant about the Calhoun Honors College switching because they just didn't think that what Calhoun represented – with slavery and so forth should have any tie-in to the institution. And so the Board of Trustees and the President changed the name on Friday late morning, and that was announced. Dabo Swinney on Saturday's speech brought up Deshaun Watson and Nuke Hopkins regarding the change of the Honors College and said, quote, "They both brought us a lot of joy. We should no longer expect them or our players to hear our cheers if we do not hear their cries." I thought it was a great line and spot on. But the student-athletes were the stars of the show, if you will, on Saturday. And, again, I just think the fact that they took complete ownership, worked with the police department, which was front and center, had a statement. They gave speeches as well. There was no unrest. People thoroughly were dialed in. Signs, kids were out there. You saw every size, shape, color. It's what America's all about. It was really, really great.
Tremendous. Yeah. You know, I think the part that you bring up is, and we'll talk to Irish O'Fell from warchant.com here in just a moment, but it looks like that influence of youth and student athlete is impacting what's going on in Tallahassee, certainly. Now, it started with a communication issue between Marvin Wilson and Mike Norvell. You know, I shared with you guys this morning an article that has been written in the Charlotte Observer about Wendell Moore at Duke, who was involved in something that went on in Cabarrus County over the weekend, a guy who had played basketball and grew up in the Charlotte area, as you know, Pac. I mean, now all of a sudden, here's the momentum of the student-athlete. And we talk about the student-athlete who's currently on the college campus, and we talk about the student-athlete who might have gone to the professional ranks, like Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins and some of these other folks that are, you know, coming with strong opinions about their alma mater. And maybe some of the inequities there. I find it to be very interesting, Pac. I find it unique because this is that demographic we talked of last week. This is the young people again coming to the forefront. And this is an optimism and an energy that we haven't seen in this country in a long time. And I know we're talking about a movement of social equality here and racial equality, but we're also talking about empowered young people through sports. And on the collegiate level, I think this is very interesting, and it's going to be a unique dynamic in which we follow, especially as we come back to regularly scheduled sports, right?
Totally agree. And I mentioned to you probably half dozen times last week, even on the air, that I'm energized to see young people energized and dialed in. And, you know, there was an interesting thing, too, that Darian Rentscher, and I'll just point this out, from Saturday, which I thought was incredibly interesting. After the march, everybody congregated back on Bowman Field, and then there was more speeches, and Dabo spoke, which you saw, and Trevor Lawrence, etc. Darian Rentscher asked a simple question to the crowd that was there, and everybody was, I mean, there were still 3,000-4,000 people sitting on the ground. He said, "Raise your hand if you've ever been to a protest, if this is the first time you've ever been to a protest." And, Wes, it was interesting. I would bet you 90% of the people still in attendance raised their hand. And to me, that was symbolic of, hey, people are listening. You know, again, there's every shape, size, color was sitting there on that field. And, people are paying attention, which I'm encouraged by because we've harped on from day one. If you are uncomfortable in this conversation, that's okay. It's a good thing to be uncomfortable. It's good that you are uncomfortable. And I say that as a white guy, because you need to have real conversations with, hey, you know what, how can I help? What can I do? And you don't have to release a statement. You don't have to release a video. You don't have to go on Twitter or social media, but just give it some thought to say, hey, how can we all be better, right? And I've harped on this from day one. It starts by looking at the person you see in the mirror. Do you treat people with respect? You can have a disagreement. There's nothing wrong with it. But at the end of the day, respect the other guy. Love the person you're talking to. And you know what? We all will be better off. And I can't emphasize again what a great job the student athletes in our ACC footprint have done. You mentioned Wendell Moore, you know, who said went to a couple protests at UNC Charlotte and said, you know, how can I make a difference in Concord, North Carolina? So you know what? He formed a protest. And a couple hundred people showed up. And again, if that's what it is that connects you with your community, feeling like you're making a sending a message, doing something better, everything around you, man, go for it. I mean, absolutely go for it. So I'm really encouraged by what we've seen with ACC student athletes and what we've seen from a national standpoint. And for people that are still knocking this, man, you got to get in the real world, man. You just have to open up your ears and your eyes and listen. You don't have to give a statement. You don't have to be loud. You don't have to run your mouth. You don't have to even put anything in print or online. Just be aware. Be dialed in. Listen to somebody who you've never spoken to, somebody from a different ethnicity or economic background, and I'm trying to understand what they've been through and how you can make this a better place. And you're hearing that message loud and clear from so many young people. It's really, really energizing.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Wes, we talked about you know, young people taking ownership in two major unity marches over the weekend, one in Clemson, one down in Tallahassee. And our buddy Ira Schofield joins us now front and center. Ira, first of all, good morning. And second of all, man, there's been a lot going on in Tallahassee here the last 2 weeks. Every time you think it's going to be an off season, there's no such thing.
Yeah, I mean, for a time of year when there's nothing going on in terms of sports, there's obviously been a lot going on around the program and off the field.
Ira, how would you qualify Saturday in the kind of 8-9 days of things that have happened with Florida State's football program? Where does Saturday's Unity March for Mike Norvell and his football program fit in?
It was pretty unique, and I think a very positive event. I didn't know what to expect. There have been a lot of protests in Tallahassee that have escalated. We've had a pickup truck kind of drive through protesters. And so you don't know when you go into a situation like that. I imagine Mike Norvell must have been very cautious about going into that situation where, half of his football team are going to put themselves out there in a movement like this. You know, there was a police presence to in case anything went wrong. But for the most part, it was, you know, those guys were out in the street. Marching and saying what they wanted to say, and it went incredibly well. I mean, one of the neat things about it was the community, the fan base, a lot of people in the fan base that you might see at a sporting event came out for this march to support these players and what they wanted to say. You had families with young children. You had people of all different backgrounds. So that was really neat. And then at the end, some of the players had a couple comments. Some activists made some comments. Overall, I thought it was a really positive event, and it was neat. It was just neat to see these players not just, you know, get on social media, but to actually get out in the community and do something to try to advocate for change.
Well, that's the thing, Ira, and I think this holds true for all the coaches, too. I mean, you know, everybody laid out a statement or a video, which is all fine and good, but the call to action, and, you know, we had Marvin on the show last week, who's one of our favorites, and he talked about, hey, here's three or four other things that we're going to accomplish to try to do. And you mentioned that Corey Durden was really the guy that spearheaded this effort. And I wrote down a quote that he had. I just want to read it. He said, you know, we're more than just football players. We're more than just athletes. A lot of people look at us and they expect us just to shut up and play football. That's not what's going to happen. We feel like we're more than that. And to me, I think that's tremendous, because I do think the student athlete, and I'm not even talking about name, image, and likeness, which is certainly coming down the road here, but I think the student athlete today has as much power and flexibility and control as they've ever had in the history of college athletics.
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of a revolution in terms of college athletics. And as you mentioned, starting with, I think it goes back to some of the actions that the NCAA has taken in the last couple of years in terms of cost of attendance and giving players more equity in the sport that they participate in, and then going into name, image, and likeness. And then to see what happened last week with Marvin Wilson and Mike Norvell, I just can't even comprehend a time that I've been doing this. I've been doing this for close to 30 years now, where a star player would call out a coach in public. Forget the topic, on any topic. I mean, it just never happens. And the fact that these guys feel that they have the ability to do that and then to not face real repercussion. And for Mike Norvell to say he was proud of Marvin Wilson for standing up what he believed in, it is completely different than anything I've seen in the last 30 years. And, I think you have to go back probably to the real beginning of the 60s and the civil rights movement there, where you had athletes do things like this. But it's been a long time, and I think from what we've seen, it's a long time coming.
Ira, I want to go to kind of the bigger picture here for just a minute, because I thought what happened last week with Coach Norvell and Marvin was an important development for his program, not just the 2020 football team, but, if Mike Norvell's the football coach at Florida State for the next 20 years, last week may prove to be kind of a landmark kind of situation for him. Do you think Mike Norvell has changed his characterization with the Florida State fan base in a very short time without ever coaching a game by the way all that played out last week?
I mean, that was a wild 15 hours. When people first saw Marvin Wilson's tweet and you started wondering, well, we don't know Mike Norvell that. I think that what really resonated was, he's been here 6 months, but half of that time, they've been in quarantine. So I think people were kind of questioning, okay, who is this guy that we've all been rallying around for 6 months? Did he really overstate or misstate what he did? And then, and for the players to stand out like that, you wonder what that relationship was like. But the fact that he confronted it and handled it and didn't try to crack down on it, I think the key to that whole thing was, if Mike Norvell had come in and done what a lot of coaches do in a lot of these situations historically, is to come down on players for going out of line, taking it out of the locker room, and really try to make a statement about how we handle things and it's got to be handled in-house, that would have completely backfired. But the fact that he apologized for it, he owned up to what he said, he explained why he said what he said, and the fact that he complimented Marvin Wilson for taking that moment, I think it really resonated to the players that, okay, this guy's not just talk. He is with us and he is going to support us. So I think looking down the line, this could be one of those things that really galvanized them. But I also would say it's too early to say for sure that's what happened. I think everybody jumped, a lot of FSU fans and even some media jumped to say, oh, wow, they cleared this hurdle and everything's going to be great. It's also going to be one of those things that the players are going to be watching him down the road, and he needs to make sure he's careful on topics that are serious like these to really say what really happened, because the players are going to be watching, and as we've seen, they're not afraid to speak up.
Ira, the flip side away from coach, I want to go back to Marvin a second, because this is a dude that could very easily, coming off a disappointing season last year as a team, say, you know what? I'm good. I've spent 3 years here in Tallahassee. I'm now going to go make millions of dollars. I'm going to be a first-round draft pick in the NFL, and life's going to be great. I'm going to take care of my family and everybody around me. That would have been almost too easy. The fact that he said, you know what, I'm not leaving Florida State on a season like that. The millions can wait. I'll get to the millions in the NFL. I'm coming back for business. I think it's awesome that a guy in that position has been almost so outspoken to say, hey, listen, no. Here's how we're going to do this with this team. I'm going to take a leadership role. And you know what? Even if my brand spanking new coach misstepped, hey, let's make sure we're all on the same page. I don't know if enough people understand that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, it would have been easy to do the exact opposite. The fact that Marvin took the exact opposite approach to me is like, man, that is a dude that I want in my locker room. I don't care if we win one game or win the national championship. I can win with that guy. That I can't get enough of those guys in my locker room.
Yeah, and I think you guys know this as well as anybody. It's no coincidence probably that Marvin Wilson and Corey Durden, who have been at the forefront of this, play for Odell Higgins, who's as stand-up a guy as there's ever been as part of the Florida State football program. And interim head coach twice and longtime defensive tackles coach. And, yeah, to your point, I think that was probably what was in Marvin's heart when all that was happening was, listen, you know, I sat down with you, Coach Norvell, when I was getting ready to go to the NFL, and everybody, including people in the program, thought I was going to the NFL. And we sat down and talked about what we were going to do with this program and how we were going to bring it back. And for 6 months, me and these other players have sold out, and we really bought into what you want to do and what you've told us you want to do. And I'm not going to sit here and just bite my tongue when there's something I see I don't agree with. And I think you're right. I think he's invested so much in this program and cares so much about this program, and he was hurt by what he thought he was seeing happening, that he kind of lashed out. And again, you got to also give credit to Mike Norvell for understanding those emotions and not just trying to quell it with force.
Well, Ira Schofield of WarChant.com is with us this morning on Packer and Durham. Ira, I want to change gears here a little bit because I know the racial equality movement is going to continue in a variety of different ways as we move toward 2020. The other aspect that's going to continue to evolve as we move toward the football season of 2020 is the way that schools are handling COVID-19 and the coronavirus and on-campus diagnosis during these voluntary workouts. We saw a development at the University of Houston late last week on a Friday afternoon. Florida State has come back. What's that been like? What's your impressions of at least so far? So good. Obviously, there's been a positive here or there, but I think we kind of expect that everywhere in some respect.
Yeah, I think Florida State has kind of been a model of what you'd like to see happen so far. Now, you know, everything I say, and anytime you talk to somebody on campus who's involved with this, they always say, you know, so far so good, but there's so many hurdles they still have to pass to get this season to go off the way everybody hopes. But they've done amazingly well. You know, they didn't bring the players back. They encouraged players to come back early if they wanted to. They knew that June 1st date was a possibility. They didn't know it was definite, but they knew there was a possibility June 1st would be the day that you could start voluntary workouts. So they told a lot of the players, look, if you want to be here and if you want to take part in those voluntary workouts, you need to come back a little bit early because we'll make sure you're quarantined, you haven't been traveling, so we can bring you in and have you tested early in January and then go from there. So they started testing about 3.5 weeks ago, and as of Thursday, they had only had one positive test. And so that went really well. And, you know, the plan is to ramp it up, I guess, in a couple weeks if the NCAA signs off on that new plan to where they can have organized activities in mid-July. Florida State has kind of been in position to take advantage of all these opportunities because they want to make up for the lost time of the spring. But they also know there's a lot of responsibility. Being one of the first schools to be in voluntary workouts, everybody's watching them. And if they have an outbreak, if they have a big problem, it could set the whole sport back or play a part in that. So they've been as careful as possible while also being as ambitious as possible.
All right, I know it's only June 15th, and this is probably not a fair question, but what is the ultimate upside for Florida State football in 2020?
You know, that's the question everybody wants to know, is what's realistic? You know, Florida State fans especially have had their hearts broken a lot the last, you know, 3 years. You know, the end of Jimbo's tenure and then really all of Willie Taggart's tenure. So I think people are trying to be cautiously optimistic. And I know you guys just showed some footage of James Blackman. I think that's going to be the key, quarterback and offensive line. This defense is a defense that can win 10 games. I mean, this should be a championship-level defense. And I know if people look up the statistics from last year, they'll ask, you know, what I've been smoking. But I'm telling you, this defense, if you look at player for player, this is a defense that could be a championship-level defense. The question's still going to be offensive line and quarterback. And what solutions Mike Norvell and Kenny Dillingham, his offensive coordinator, and Alex Atkins, the offensive line coach, what solutions can they come up with in quick order to at least not beat themselves? I think if you look at Florida State the last 2 years under Willie Taggart, as big as anything that they've done wrong, they've beaten themselves. If they can avoid that with that defense, I think they have a chance to win 8-9 games, maybe go crazy and win 10 games. But you know, I don't know that it's about the wins and losses. They just have to be more organized and actually compete and not beat themselves. And that's going to put them in a much better position than they've been the last couple of years.
Ira Schofield covers the Florida State Seminoles for WarChant.com. Always appreciate your time, my man. Stay well, and let's hope we stay on schedule to 2020, right?
I heard that. Thanks, guys. Take care.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, not just a regular Monday, the 150th show of Packer and Durham. 150. Buck 50, West Durham. We're going to have some fun with this because this is people can jump on board with this one at 844-SAY-ACCN. We're, what, 75 days from the football season starting, give or take? Something like that?
Ish.
We want to give a list of just some people that you can't wait to see play. And we're not even really looking for Trevor Lawrence or Sam Howe, right? Those are kind of givens. Travis Etienne. We get that.
Right.
We get that. But dudes that you're like, man, wait till you guys get a load of fill in the blank, right? That guy. Who is that guy that you saw promise in 2019 that said, man, we got a year under our belt. Wait till you see this guy show up. And that's where I want everyone to fill in the blank on this question. Again, if you want to call him Trevor, ETN, or Hal, we get it. We all get it. Those guys have kind of established themselves as the dudes. But who's like the next wave of guys in ACC football for 2020 that you say, boy, hold on, grab your popcorn, because this guy's going to be a showcase dude. Who is that?
Well, I mean, I think they're obvious ones, and you've mentioned the obvious ones. And anybody across the country who follows college football, you know, just kind of halfway knows Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne and probably, what, Greg Rousseau at Miami, right, Pac?
No question.
But they're guys. There are guys, though, who made an impact at times last year who you might have forgotten during the winter months and maybe even during the quarantine. And if you're starting to go into your local grocery store and you look at the newsstand and you see those magazines that that went to press probably in late March or early April when everything got shut down, there are going to be a few names on there that you need to remember. And one is Mark Packers, maybe one of Mark Packers' favorite players in this league, and it's Paris Ford, the safety from Pittsburgh. That's the one. If I'm going to tell you to keep an eye on a guy, Paris Ford of Pittsburgh would be – he might not be number one, but he's definitely in my top three of guys to watch, Pat.
I am so glad you brought him up, because if you didn't, I was. Pat Narduzzi knows how much I love Mr. Ford now. He will hit you, and he can score, as he does right here against Duke. Paris Ford's a bad man now. And here's the other thing. That defensive line at Pitt, they were really, really good last year. And you know, Wes, they were hurt early. I mean, they lost a couple key cogs. Didn't matter. Pitt's defensive line, and that's why when we started talking about the Coastal last week and people already automatically put North Carolina, Virginia Tech, and Miami up there, hey, you can go deeper than that. And I think one of the reasons is Pitt's D-line. You know what? They are a wrecking crew, man. They just wore people out. And then you got Paris Ford back there. Pat Narduzzi's defense could be nasty as a whole for 2020. So I'm certainly looking forward to that. You know, I'm looking at a couple quarterbacks, Wes, that are not named Trevor Lawrence and Sam Howell. I can't wait to see Mr. King at Miami. I've seen him play at Houston. The guy's a dynamic athlete. I want to see him in that system. What does that look like for the Miami Hurricanes? Because the guy is a great, great athlete. And another guy that we have seen play in the ACC, but he's now going to be wearing different colors, and that's Chase Brice. Chase Bryce is a star. Chase Bryce could play for so many teams in this country, it's not even funny. He's in the shadow of Trevor Lawrence and says, you know what? I got a chance to make a move. I'm going to. And he now goes to Duke. And then you throw that in with David Cutcliffe, who's basically a quarterback whisperer. I love that combination. Uh-huh. So I think those two guys, from an offensive perspective, Chase Bryce and Mr. King, as I'm going to call him, Mr. King, down there at Miami. I can't wait to see what they do in new venues. And that defensive front in Pittsburgh and Paris Ford, that would be my combination.
Yeah, well, I think Tom Luganville gave us a fan's guide to De'Eriq King last week in his visit when he talked about the combination of Rhett Lashley as offensive coordinator along with De'Eriq King and the skill set. Because to call what Miami will do a spread is probably not the right term, because it's a play action pass game more than anything else. And I'm a two back play action game is really what De'Eriq King does. And I think he's got a chance to burst on the scene, certainly in the ACC and maybe nationally. And you think about the way their schedule kind of starts, and then they go to Michigan State, and all of a sudden De'Eriq King, he could be hard to handle. I understand the point on Chase Bryce, Pack. Now for the Blue Devils, I think Bryce is a given. To me, the emerging talent, on that side of the ball for Duke might be the defensive end, Chris Rump II. And as much as I like De'Eriq King and Chase Bryce as quarterback guys, if you want to watch somebody, Chris Rump is going to be a guy at Duke that I want to focus on, because I think Matt Guerrieri is one of the rising stars in coaching. And Chris Rump is one of those guys like Rousseau that lines up at so many different spots. And I'm not smart enough to figure out kind of how the logic works when defensive coordinators and guys that empower the front seven or front six in some of these 3-3-5 schools start going to work on how they move guys around. But I'll tell you this, the athleticism that Chris Rump has, and we had Duke obviously last year in the final game of the year against Miami, and Eric Wood was talking, and he and Roddy Jones were both very high on the ceiling of Chris Rump and where he's going. So Chris Rump and Chase Bryce are two guys at Duke for sure. I'm going to give you one more here just as a throw in. And I'll go to Georgia Tech, because a lot's going to be talked about Jeff Collins' second year. We've already talked about how hard the schedule is. I think one of the more underrated running backs in the ACC, in fact, behind Travis Etienne and maybe a couple of others, and I'd certainly use Javion Hawkins, who had a great year at Louisville, right? But Jordan Mason at Georgia Tech is a guy who does so much and really has had a very, very productive first couple of years in Atlanta. Obviously, last year for Jeff Collins, year before for Paul Johnson. But Jordan Mason is a hard runner, a guy who gets a lot out of seemingly every carry. Can catch the ball a little bit. And I think he's a guy that, even though as difficult as Georgia Tech's schedule is, I think Jordan Mason has a chance to have a pretty good year for Georgia Tech if, in fact, their offensive line can stay healthy. Funny how we always mention health, right? Florida State got beat up last year. There were injuries across the board at Miami and Georgia Tech, certainly with Kenny Cooper and Jahazel Lee being gone for most of the year in that offensive front. It's going to be interesting to watch, see if Jordan Mason gets off to a good start for the Jackets.
There is a combination of wide receivers in this league. And we've harped on how quality the quarterback list is, right, from top to bottom. The wide receivers in this league are really, really good. And you could put the entire combination that Mac Brown's going to be able to play with, I think, in 2020 and say, you know what, all three of those guys, because you know the quarterback's going to get the football to every one of these dudes, right? But I like the core that North Carolina, and I'd even throw Louisville in there too, in terms of the numbers of guys that can make plays. And I harped on it last week, man. If you're a season ticket holder at Louisville and North Carolina, you're going to laugh and have a good time this fall, because your teams are going to score so often. There's so many weapons all over the field, both those teams.
Yeah, I think you're smart to say the core at both places, especially at Carolina, where you hear Da'Ami Brown and Daz Newsome a lot, excuse me. But I don't want people to forget about Bo Corrales. I think Bo Corrales's size and skill set and speed really gives him an opportunity for success at the next level, too. And, I mean, you're still talking about a guy who's 6'4", who can make plays in the red zone. He can make them go into the corners. I mean, that's a unique piece. And so, yeah, I'd say the core is probably the answer at Carolina for sure, and at Louisville. And again, you know, we go back to that Justin Ross injury, right? I mean, where we talk about Ngata and Latson and things like that. And there are players packed that we don't know yet at Clemson who we know from recruiting, but we don't know from what they can do on the field. And that's the other part about this that I think we've got to be cognizant of is that part's going to change too. There are going to be guys that emerge in these practices who are going to get shots in the first couple, 3 weeks of the season, and they're going to take off. And I think that's one of the things to be excited about in the college football season as well.
Zach in Michigan. Zach, good morning. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are we doing today?
We're good. Hope you are.
Great.
Hey, doing good. You guys are talking about the wide receivers, and being up here in Big Ten land, obviously there's a lot to like, but having a chance to watch some ACC guys, I actually watched this guy's highlights this weekend, and you're talking about wide receivers. I'm going with Sage Surratt out of Wake Forest. And when you look at the fact that last year, Jamie Newman, they didn't have him towards the end of the season, and then going into that bowl game against Michigan State, you wonder what if he had played in that bowl game, what kind of difference he can make. But I think looking at now the Justin Ross injury, you start to look at some of the top receivers in this conference, Tamarian Terry being one of those guys. You know, you guys mentioned Daz Newsome, De'Ami Brown at North Carolina, Tutu Atwell at Louisville. It's hard not to find a guy like Sage Surratt, the size that he has, the ability for a guy like Sam Hartman to put it up deep down the field and where this is a guy who could go up and get it. And he just eclipsed the 1,000-yard mark last year. And he has a nose for the end zone. So if I look at anybody that I think is going to be interesting to watch this year in the ACC, I think it's hard not to overlook a guy like Sage Surratt.
Zach, excellent observation. Spot on. Right on the money. And you know what the other thing, too, was? When he did get hurt last year, Jamie Newman and Wake's offense wasn't the same. I mean, the guy's a big-time talent. Got great size, great hands, doesn't mind going over the middle. He's got every box checked. He's a big-time player.
All right, I want to spin something here on you real quick before we go to break. We can talk about Sage Surratt. We can talk about the way they may run the ball, all the things about Wake Forest. Can we say that the transition from Jamie Newman to Sam Hartman might be the easiest one of any school changing starting quarterbacks in the ACC this year?
Yes.
Because of the experience level that Sam Hartman has? Because I'm telling you, I don't believe the drop from Jamie Newman to Sam Hartman is as far as some people want to say it is.
Totally agree with that. Totally agree. And I think Dave Clawson's completely comfortable, and so is his football team. And, you know, we're going to talk about coaches later on in the show, and the job Dave Clawson's done in Winston-Salem, remarkable. And they just keep, you know, hey, they got players, man. And Sage Surratt can play for anybody in the country, but I'm with you, Wes. I think that transition is seamless for Wake Forest.
Packer and Durham.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Wes, you mentioned Wendell Moore doing his thing, too, the Duke basketball player here in Concord. But we'll get back to all those topics. But we've got some odds for you because it's never too early in the middle of June to talk about such things. But the ACC, in terms of star power, certainly well represented in the number of the items that we're getting ready to unveil to you as we speak.
All right. I want to run these by you because you're my man on odds, right? How often do you get these emails, by the way? It's ridiculous how often you get this stuff, right?
I kid around with you and everybody else here at ESPN when we first started doing this stuff. I get stuff that from almost every country in America and in the world in some shape, way, or form, whether I can read it or not. And I get more bizarre emails than anybody on the planet. But odds are one of them. And, of course, one of our lumberjacks certainly is very interested in these. But I digress on that. But yeah, this is an odds regarding the NFL draft for 2021. I know we haven't even got to the 2020 football season, and we're worried about the 21 draft.
That's it. So these odds, first of all, the first pick of the 2021 draft, the top of the card at 1-3 as the first pick of the draft is Trevor Lawrence, Pack.
Why not?
I mean, he hadn't even taken the first snap this fall, right? I mean,
well, nobody has, but I mean, the reputation speaks for itself. The guy's been fantastic. He's lost one game in his college career, and it was the last one. And believe me, it is burning inside going into this 2020 season based on the LSU performance and outcome. But this guy's got the whole package, man. He really does. Size, great arm, smart, understands how to play the game, not to mention surrounded with great talent. He's going to make somebody really, really happy on the next level. There's no question.
Well, and he's obviously the same odds maker makes him the first quarterback to be selected in the draft. That odd is 4-13, by the way. That's a little out of whack, don't you think?
Man, is that what it is? 4-13?
4-13. Yeah. Yeah.
That was Deshaun Watson and Hunter Renfrow, wasn't it? Wasn't that the combination, 4-13?
Very nice. Well done. By the way, others, I know you will. 8-10, right? And then later in the afternoon. The other players listed on this list, excuse me, Justin Fields is 7-2, De'Eric King 10-1.
Hold on. Mr. King. I mean, the fact that he's getting those kind of numbers. Now, keep in mind now, in Houston, transferred, year off, new system at Miami, but yet people in this world are already going, hey, the guy is a talent. So, as I mentioned to you 15 minutes ago, he's one of the guys I can't wait to see play in a new system, in a new environment. But already people nationwide taking note.
Well, yeah, because 2 years ago he had 50 TDRs. I mean, he was as impactful as any player in college football 2 years ago, Mark. I mean, it's just not even close what he had going at Houston. And there is a belief, and again, I'll go back to what our conversation with Tom Luganville. There may be no better fit in college football of a first-year quarterback and a first-year OC than De'Eric King and Rhett Lashley. I mean, it's almost a given that they're going to be good. And again, I'll talk about Miami. If they can clean up the offensive front, they find a way to consistently run the ball a little bit, you know he's got weapons on the perimeter. I mean, we saw it a year ago. There's a variety of people beyond the K.J. Osbournes and the Jeff Thomases who aren't there anymore. I mean, look at what he's got at tight end alone with Brevin Jordan coming back. I mean, this is a kid who I think can have a big-time impact. So the 10-1, yeah, might be a little surprising to some, but when you think about what his worksheet is, it shouldn't surprise you at all, I don't think.
And it's what makes the Coastal interesting. North Carolina, everybody back. Virginia Tech, everybody back. Both those schools are going to get all the love in terms of the preseason hype.
Right.
And here's Miami with something to prove with a guy that can make plays. The race is going to be phenomenal. It always is. It's interesting. You can never figure it out. But I think it's one of the reasons Miami will be in the conversation.
And by the way, real quick, before we go to break here at the top of the hour, the first running back to be picked in the 2021 draft at 11-10 is Travis Etienne, by the way, Mark.
No surprise. A lot of folks were surprised that he decided to come back for his last year. He's going to break every record known to man if he stays healthy. He is a first-round dude, and we have seen his act now for 3 years. He's spectacular, great kid. And, man, can he play. You lose Justin Ross, you go, man, one of the Tigers can do it wide receiver. Hey, how about hand it off to number 9 15 more times? I mean, that guy can beat you. He is a great, great player.
Yep. And so Travis Etienne's at the top of that list as well. And, yep, a lot of Tigers up there, but De'Eric King is there as well. Wouldn't be surprised as we get to some of this. Hang on a second. Where are you going, big boy?
Yeah, you know what? I was I was just getting ready to say I can hear you crystal clear. I'm not sure the viewer can, but I heard Clifford D. Cat crystal clear about 10 seconds ago.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, he came checking you out on a Monday, making sure you're doing all right. So I think he was good. Yeah, he came by. Just to visit. He doesn't stay long now when he sees all the lights and everything in here.
The dogs are sound asleep in here. We would get a shot of Chester and Fuller, but they are absolutely cutting Z's in here. So they got no movement with the pets in the basement.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.